Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right. I am excited to be presenting this episode. We are going to be interviewing Richard Shannon, who is one of our provider attorneys out of Austin, Texas. And Mr. Shannon has been a practicing attorney for over 50 years. So over a half century. We've had a lot of newer attorneys, brand new solos, attorneys making transitions in their practice in the most recent episodes. But you know, happy to have a veteran experienced attorney for practicing family law for over 20 years on the show today, talking about limited scope representation. And he has a really unique and very broad perspective of the legal marketplace and how the shrinking of our middle class and the income inequality has affected the practice of law and what lawyers have to do nowadays in order to thrive in this marketplace. And he had been offering limited scope representation and limited scope options before we had ever, you know, gotten in touch with him. He makes some recommendations to some books and resources and, you know, all kinds of different strategies that you can look into to learn more about the changes in the marketplace as far as, you know, shrinking middle class, increases in pro se filings, increases in amount of attorneys graduating these days, and the amount of competition there is, and the adaptations he's had to make and many lawyers are making along with those on this podcast in our network to continue to thrive and serve clients in this new market. So he goes into the types of options he offers, the consultation approach he takes. So he spends a lot more time than some other lawyers do on that first call and goes through and really talks about empathetic listening and the types of questions he asks, how he shows compassion and really gets at, you know, making sure that clients feel heard, understood, and also qualifies them financially and asks a series of questions there, talks about how he uses the script. So there's a lot of practical strategies here as well as a big picture perspective from an attorney that's been practicing for years and years and years and has a very unique and broad perspective on the marketplace these days and what you can do to thrive within it. So with that, let's get right into this episode, this interview with Richard Shannon, one of our provider attorneys out of Austin, Texas. All right, Richard, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'm happy to share.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm certainly excited to get a chance to jump online with you. We've been working together for some time now, and you've certainly got many years of experience under your belt beyond well before we had a chance to work together. And looking forward to getting to know you better, getting to learn a little bit more about how well things have been going, the strategies you developed to achieve such good results, and overall, just have a good chat about what's working well for you. So thanks for taking the time today.
You're welcome.
All right. So maybe a good place to start is just give a little bit of background on maybe how you got your start in the practice of law, what your focus of your practice is nowadays, and the region you serve.
All right. I'd be happy to do that. So I'm in Austin, Texas. I grew up, I was born and reared in the lower Rio Grande Valley, South Texas. Brownsville is the county seat. Went to the University of Texas, studied liberal arts, which for which I'm very grateful, gave me a kind of a love for lifelong learning. And then I went to the University of Texas School of Law. When I graduated, I went to the Attorney General's office, worked as an assistant attorney general, actually condemning land for interstate highways. Then I moved to the Department of Insurance, worked as a lawyer there, then worked as a bureaucrat. I left the Department of Insurance, went into private practice. I had a practice mostly regulatory law and transactions law, dealing with insurance companies and agencies. Did that. That was a successful practice, kind of a boutique practice, but kind of got bored with it. Got out into some business ventures. One of them had to do with relationship marketing. So in relationship marketing, I learned a great deal about human relations and the human relations aspect of law practice. Of course, in law school, at least at the University of Texas, when I was going through school, we didn't have many offerings in clinical experience for how to hang out your shingle and practice law. I mean, the expectation was that the law graduates would join a either a big, medium-sized, or small law firm and be mentored by lawyers that had experience. Despite the fact that we now know that 50% or more of lawyers graduating are going out solo and hanging their own shingle.
Right.
So after I got back into law, and I did that, I re-entered law through studying conflict resolution and mediation and got very interested in that. And that led me into family law practice. So I've been doing family law practice almost exclusively now for over 20 years.
Hmm. Okay, great. And, you know, it's been about 6 months or so we've been working together so far.
Something like that. Maybe about three, four months.
Yep.
Yeah, I was offering limited scope or unbundled legal services prior to working with Unbundled Attorney, but I've been very pleased with the lead program offered by your firm, and it's worked really well for me.
Yeah, great. And maybe you could give a bit of context, and you mentioned a couple of things, conflict resolution, mediation, some other things I really want to dive into, because that, I'm sure, informs the way in which you work with clients and the types of options you offer and how you resolve some of these conflicts in a way that could be more amicable and more cost-effective for both parties. But can you give a little bit of context on, what has happened since these last 3 months? Anything you can recall that is either, how many clients you've been able to convert or, how it's worked well for your firm. And then we can start to dive into, how you were able to achieve such these results.
Yeah. Well, Scott Graham, one of your associates who contacted me and was the person that helped me get established with Unbundled Attorney has been very helpful in guiding me through learning from other people's experience so that I could make this program work well. So I really appreciate the kind of hands-on support that I've received. One of the things that I got, which I really liked, was a script that had been developed over time, which I think framed the initial interview with the clients in a way that helped it be very efficient. Anyway, I found that script to be very helpful in guiding the interview with a client after I got the lead. And of course, we're encouraged to contact them by phone, email, and text because those are the modes that people are using today, and that's very effective. But I'm pretty successful getting people on the phone. In fact, sometimes the leads will call me before I get a chance to call them. When they do call, I like to follow the script pretty well, pretty closely. And that helps both the client and myself figure out, well, are they a match for Unbundled Legal Services? Or are they just kicking tires? Or are they really a candidate for Full Scope Legal Services? So I spend generally, and I know some people may be more time efficient, but I generally spend maybe 20, 25, 30 minutes, not with everyone, but with a lot of them, to figure out what it is they're looking for. Are they serious? And then, of course, the obvious question, do they have resources to work with? Because the services are not free. And once we get down to the point of figuring out they do or don't have resources, we can schedule an appointment. I would say for those that qualify for an appointment, is somewhere probably over 50%, 50 to 60%. Once we get an appointment, I would say for those people who come in and have an appointment, my conversion rate is, I would say rather high, about 80%.
Right. So if about half the clients,
to 60% come, go to, an office meeting of the people who come into the office, I'd say 80% or more, become clients.
Right. So you're looking at maybe, three, four clients out of 10 retaining you, which is fantastic. It's outstanding. That's almost about one out of three. So it's really great. And it's just, a good testament to, how these last 3 months have gone, given that you're serving a pretty large region of Austin. We're sending you a lot of clients. Yeah. So things have gone pretty well. You brought up a number of things that I'd love to dive into. And that is that, your initial consultation, and attorneys take a very a wide range of approaches to doing the initial consultation over the phone. Some of them just do it as a quick touch base to have them come right in the office because they want to meet with them right away. Others will take 10, 15 minutes, you know, and then others like yourself will take a little bit more extended time to really have that first phone call be a lot more valuable to dive into their situation, understand what they're looking for help with. And as you said, as you coined it, kind of qualify that person as to whether they are, you know, a good candidate to take that next step. So right. could you talk a little bit more about how the script has helped you, what aspects of it have been most helpful to you, and also what it is you do on that first phone consultation to qualify or not qualify, and what that criteria looks like, and the types of questions you may ask to determine that?
Yeah, I really follow the sequence of the script pretty closely because I think that script has built into it a lot of qualifiers. And it's really a two-way conversation. It's finding out not only what the client needs, but also from my standpoint, am I going to be able to help them? And it's also part of building a relationship. People want to have somebody feel that somebody is hearing and understanding what it is they're concerned about, why they have a lawsuit in their life. And in that short period of time, I try to establish through empathetic listening, begin to build trust, because trust is at the heart of a good attorney-client relationship. I also, and it's a two-sided thing, really, because I want to know if they what they need in the way of legal services, begin to establish that trust relationship. I also want to know if it's going to be a good use of my time and expense to meet with them in the office. Now, I have a virtual office arrangement, so my production facilities are not at the place where I meet clients. I think more and more attorneys are beginning to do this. And I don't want to spend the money for a meeting space if they're not a good candidate. And on the other hand, I don't want them to waste their time coming into the office. And sometimes people, you know, and I understand this, sometimes they just are kind of confused and dazed, and they want just a little bit of information. And, you know, frankly, if they're just a little confused and dazed, I'm happy to spend a little bit of time with them if that's all they get, even though they turn out not to be a good candidate for a variety of reasons. So I understand there's an attitude out there. Some attorneys have it. I can understand that they want to have a greater kind of detachment, a professional detachment. They want a little more rigid structure to the relationship, and they want to, you know, get an upfront fee of $300 to $500 to come in the office. You don't get to, you know, they call the office, they get a legal assistant, he gets a little bit of information, and then if you want to see Mr. XYZ, you need to pay X number of dollars and come in and visit the great poobah and, you know, gain from his wisdom. So, but, you know, that can be a little bit off-putting to people. And it can, you know, it may not be intended that way, but it can come across as being a little bit of somewhat of professional arrogance. And I think people they want a professional they can feel is competent, but they also, even more importantly, want somebody who is going to be a good communicator and a good listener.
Right, exactly.
In fact, some people that speak, I have a little chart somewhere that what lawyers think clients want and what clients want from lawyers are not the same.
Right.
They're kind of upside down. Lawyers think they want competence. Clients want a lawyer who's going to be in readily available, they have good contact, and they have good communication, and they have good listening.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's something that we've certainly seen as a pattern across all the podcast episodes and, of course, all of our network, is so many of the attorneys, in fact, the vast majority, with only, you know, with actually few exceptions of the attorneys we work with, make those initial calls themselves. you know, and sometimes you, you're not always available because you're in court or you're doing other things. And so, you know, you got to schedule around that and make that work. I mean, not everyone can, you know, respond to leads immediately, but, you know, I think for the most part, and maybe you can share, you know, your experience, but clients are real happy to hear when they get that call that it's the attorney.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're willing to take the time to listen to them and get to know what's going on with their problem.
Absolutely. I fully agree with that.
Yep. And so, you know,
Here's that little survey. What clients want? Lawyers think they want competence, communication, accessibility, accountability, collaboration, respect, and courtesy. But the survey says clients want collaboration, accessibility, communicator, accountability, respect and courtesy, and competence is at the bottom of the list. I'll send you this. You'd like this.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to see it. Maybe we can put it in the show notes as a perfect example. So, you know, this is kind of what we're talking about. So, you know, taking the time to listen, really understand what is they're going. You talked about empathetic listening. Can you share a little bit about what that looks like, you know, in practice, you know, for those that aren't familiar with that term and a concept, just so we can maybe pull out some ideas for that.
Absolutely. Empathy is not the same thing as sympathy. So sympathy is like, I know how you feel. I felt the same way. And isn't that awful? You know, that's giving sympathy. Empathy, on the other hand, is listening actively and then feeding back to somebody. So you're saying, listen, I hear you and I understand you. Now, that doesn't mean that I have the same emotional response that you have to the experience, but I understand what your emotion is and I understand why you're having that response. Now, if you have empathy, you can then move to the next step, which is kind of a spiritual step, and that is compassion. And compassion is where you have enough of you're out of your own ego enough that you can understand their suffering and you can take actions and help them take actions to remove suffering from their life. And people who are in litigation are suffering at the human level. And we, if we want to be servers of mankind, we need to help relieve their suffering.
Yep, absolutely. And especially within family law, there's so many emotions going on. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much on the line
I we'll get around to talking about my nonprofit. I did some research and I found an amazing quote from none other than United States Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger in the early 80s. While he was Chief Justice, he said that our profession, meaning the law judicial profession, is about healing human conflict. Now, I dare say that most people who come out of law school, as well as the public, do not think of lawyers as healers. But I think that's a great frame of reference for us to have about our profession.
Yeah, and if you're coming at it from that perspective, there's so many more layers to the relationship and even the professional relationship. When you think of yourself, like instantly when you think of yourself as a healer, that's someone that's soothing someone, making them feel comfortable, making them feel better, you know, listening to them, with someone understanding them, in addition to being a competent provider of services in the traditional legal sense. But instantly when you start to look at it through that frame, you can start to imagine how that would change the dynamic.
Yeah. You know, of course, we lawyers, we're trained, we're hired to provide legal services. But when, especially in the family law area, it's so much about relationship, because the entire reason these people are in court is because important, fundamental, primary relationships in their life have become dysfunctional, painful, and are causing them suffering in some way. And they're entangled in it. And they got the tar baby, and they don't know how to get rid of it. So in my view, and I'm not trained, I don't have formal training, but I've done a lot of work to, I think, make myself effective as kind of a life coach in addition to being a law practitioner. And, you know, you got to be careful with that. but because I'm certainly not a psychologist, not trying to give psychotherapeutic services. If they need that, we need to refer them. I think that the counselor, so my law license says I'm an attorney at law, attorney and counselor at law. Well, what's the counselor role? And I think part of the counselor role in family law is not only are you know the law in the books and you know the law in action, but you know a lot about relationships, and you can give people some guidance with respect to their relationship issues, counseling about it. I call it coaching.
Hmm. Right, exactly. And so can we try to translate that practically into some of the things that you'll do on the call, aside from, you know, maybe from the very beginning when you first chat with them, you ask them what's going on with their situation. You listen to their problem. You're asking questions. You're asking what they want to see happen, and you get into the qualifiers. Can you talk a little bit more about how that perspective and that approach and that intention threads itself in, into the call as far as the steps that you follow, on that initial call to identify their needs, what they need help with, make sure they're clear, and then qualify them, and then convey mm-hmm. the services you can offer them.
Yeah. Well, of course, each one of these calls is a little bit unique depending on their situation. Like our conversation is, but I try to make it conversational. I don't want them to feel like I'm following some rigid script. But I will explain things as we go along if I feel they don't have understood. Oftentimes they don't know what unbundled or limited scope means. I have a little way to explain that. I'll tell them. It's sort of like going into a restaurant that has a big buffet, and you can pay one price and get the whole buffet all you eat, or you can order a la carte. So unbundled is a la carte. And other things that come up, I'll try to give them a little explanations. Well, then if I'm using legal terms, say, this is kind of a fancy word lawyers use, and this is what it means for people who are not trained as lawyers. So I'm a little bit of kind of a professorial tone, I guess you might say, but not trying to be condescending and just being a little bit educational. They seem to appreciate that. Uh-huh. By the end of it, we'll figure out, it'd be a good idea to come in and have a meeting. I had one guy call me. I've had more than one people say, "You're the guy I need." After this conversation gets underway, they're beginning to feel the value of the relationship.
And the quality of your, compassion, yeah. caring for what their situation is, the willingness to take a listen, be real with them. That's all come out at that point, yeah.
Now, then when we get in the office and I learn more in depth and I have, a better opportunity to demonstrate my level of law, my level of knowledge about the law in the books and the law in action, and that demonstrates competence and experience.
Right. Okay. So let's say you've gotten through the call and you've done your best to be empathetic and have some capacity for the situation, make them feel really heard and understood. You mentioned that you have kind of a qualifying criteria. Obviously, there's going to be some case qualifications. You can't move forward because of you have to wait this amount of period, or maybe you don't have a pathway. So there's that, of course. And then there's also finances. So what is that qualifying criteria for you, and how do you determine if someone is qualified or not? Like, what is the basis for that? And is it strictly financial, or is it case? And what are the types of questions you may ask to figure out, is this someone I want to go ahead and take the next step and meet with?
Yeah, well, kind of several levels. One, I got to have a sense of what is the competence level of the person I'm talking with. How much can they take on? And I tell them, I says, this unbundled thing is you ask the attorney to do some things, and then you, the client, are going to do other things. And I have to determine, you and I together have to determine how much you can take on and handle with competence and what you want me to do. And then how much you want me to take on is going to be related to how much money you got to work with. And so then that gets us into how much money you got to work with. And frankly, I've got so much business since I've been working with unbundled attorney that I've had to expand my capacity, and I've had to slow down on taking cases so I could build up capacity and catch up. And I recently had someone says, well, look, you know, I've got this and this going on. And you're saying you need something by this date. I don't think I can get it done. So I think you probably ought to, you know, call somebody else who's got greater availability. So I'll let them know if I can't give them prompt service.
Right. If someone's like got to respond to something within, you know, a few days or something like that, yeah, you know, and you may not be in a position to do it.
Yeah. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to try to shoot straight with them. Well, I do shoot straight with them and let them know. So anyway, then we talk about the money and I said, well, fine. Why don't you come in and let's see what we can do. We'll get something started. And we set the appointment. They come in and oftentimes that'll lead to, limited scope, and I, you know, have the limited scope agreement lays out the whole long list of things that can be unbundled a la carte, and how much of this do you want me to do?
Right.
So,
yeah, and if we could, you know, I kind of find there's a lot of value in the details and, you know, the actual specifics on what's said, because, yep, you know, attorneys are always on the phone. They're, you know, they're trying to determine the same things. And so, but there's always little things like that analogy you gave of, you know, if you think about unbundled legal service, kind of like when you go to a buffet and you can just pay one fee and get, yep, the whole service, or you can just, you know, buy something a la carte. That's a nice analogy. That's a useful analogy that, you know, attorney could use. Mm-hmm. So, What are some of the questions when you kind of start talking about, you got to situate, you understand what their situation is. You're starting to talk about unbundled versus full representation. You're starting to talk about the various ways you can work with them. You know, how do you explain the different options you offer? How do you ask them, okay, where are you at financially? Or are you working? What can you afford? Like, do you ask them point blank, what do you have available? Or which option do you ask them, which option sounds best to you? And can you fit that in your budget? I mean, how do you?
Well, I typically say, you know, well, something like, how have you thought about, you know, I go through the part about,
I've spoken to any attorneys about this.
What do they understand about the cost of legal services in the marketplace? And I want to find out what they are thinking legal services cost. Some people have very unrealistic ideas. Sometimes they're unrealistic on too high, sometimes it's too low. And so the first thing to do is to kind of learn how get on the same page with the expectation about cost for services. Then I'll ask them, well, what kind of budget do you have to work with, or how much did you plan to spend on this? And, you know, depending on how much, you know, I can do several different levels of service based on how much money you got to work with. I mean, that's
right off the script
too. I mean, it's just, of it. And if they tell me, well, you know, I only have 500, but I can come up with 1,000 a month from now. I said, well, look, well, we could get started with 500 and we could do this. And, you know, and then I kind of guide them as to what we could do. And they, you know, and I've had several of them say, well, I'm going to call you back. And then they get some money together and they call back and they say, I got my money together now, let's get started.
Right. Okay, so maybe we could talk about some of the options that you do offer for someone that, you know, obviously you've got your full representation and, you know, you've got your retainer fee for that, whatever that may be. And then you've got folks that maybe don't have that available right up front. So could you maybe give a snapshot overview of the types of different options you offer for someone that maybe doesn't have the ability to pay the full amount immediately up front?
Well, kind of the rock bottom is just coaching, maybe over the phone. So I'll quote them a fee for just giving them guidance. Look, there are a lot of forms that are available in Texas. And, you know, people can go, and a lot of people actually come in the office and they already have those forms and they've already used them and they've already got their own case started, but they realize the complexity is more than they expected. And because of that, they need the help of a professional. If they have a little bit more money, I can say, well, you know, I could help you prepare some documents that maybe are a little bit too technical for you. If they got more money, then in addition to assisting with document preparation, I can actually draft some more complicated documents or get into more limited scope where I'm not only giving them coaching and assisting or actually drafting the documents, but developing strategies and maybe even going in, like in Travis County, the local rules allow us to make a limited scope appearance. So we can file a notice of limited scope appearance and go in for just, you know, one hearing. We're not there for the full case, which is really nice. So I may say, okay, I can represent you in this one hearing because you only have enough for one hearing.
Right.
If they got still more money, you know, I say, fine, well, I'm available then to do more than that. And then if we work, sometimes we get started on a limited scope and convert to full scope because they realize they're going through a learning curve of what it's like to handle a law case. And they're beginning to see and appreciate that, yeah, I need professional service and it's worth what it takes. And yeah, I need you to handle the whole thing.
Right.
I have one guy, and he's a really bright guy. I mean, this guy is in high tech. He works for a couple of big high tech companies, and he's got a pretty good income. He's got an excellent income, as a matter of fact. But he got started out using a popular website that provided forms. And he quickly realized that he wasn't going to get very far because he did kind of have a difficult spouse to work with. And so it was not going to be amicable. And he realized that. And I started out just coaching him. And then finally, we went to full scope. And he gave me, it's posted on the website. He said, I started out with these legal forms and I realized he had a clever way to do it. I'll go ahead and use the name. He said, I was using LegalZoom, Legal Doom. And then he realized that he needed a lot more than just how to fill out a form.
Yeah, I could see the review right here. My divorce is long because I initially attempted the LegalZoom, a.k.a. Legal Doom route.
Yeah.
Mrs. Shannon knew I needed to save some money after discussing my situation. I opted as limited scope representation, gave me the option to become to do as much paperwork as I wanted in order to save on expenses. When it became clear my ex-wife would not cooperate in any reasonable manner, I was forced to have Richard provide full representation. And then he goes on to, you know, obviously give you glowing reviews on the service you provided, but it's true.
Yeah, I have a very good relationship with that client.
Yep. And so, you know, what you find is, it sounds like you kind of meet people with where they're at and what they believe they need help with to start with, and let them come to their own experience or come to their own knowledge of what it's going to be experientially. Like, wow, you know, one step at a time, as opposed to trying to sell them from day one. Well, you're going to really need full representation. They can kind of, in a way, they're going to figure that out on their own eventually, either way.
Yeah, it's better. It's much better for them to figure it out and say, oh, I need you, rather than feeling like you're trying to sell me.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And so once it becomes there, they realize it for themselves, then they are opting in as opposed to you trying to convince them against their will, you know, or of something that they have come to know themselves on their own, on their own accord.
Well, they're going to have resentment. They're likely to have residual resentment. Well, you may be right, but, you know, and you sold them. And they finally ponied up the money because they think, well, maybe I don't have any other choice. As opposed to, oh, I see what it's like. I really need this person.
Yeah. And then be grateful that that you're then taking over and taking care of all the stuff that they had to deal with themselves.
Yeah. And then they're, you know, they don't feel so resentful about paying the fees.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that when you offer these, you know, unbundled options, they're lower cost. It's a lower barrier to entry, and so you get a chance to start delivering service to these folks and offer options that maybe, you know, it would have been a tougher sell if you had to sell more service to start.
Well, some people report to me that they've been in the marketplace and they go and they have a custody case, and so they say, hey, you know, I'm getting quotes of, okay, you ought to come in with $5,000, you got to come in with $10,000. I have one case where they said your custody case $25,000.
Wow.
That's just such, well, first of all, people don't have the money. So now they feel, oh my God, you know, I know I need a lawyer, but I'm totally priced out. I feel helpless. I'm powerless. you know, they feel terrible because they got this demand for something that's way beyond their means, and nobody, and they won't talk to them. They're getting this from some legal assistant. And so by the, if they come around through this route, they feel so, oh my God, what a different experience. Totally different experience. Now I got the lawyer in the line. He's not charging me for the front end conversation. He's listening to what I had to say. He understands. He's willing to start out with a little bit of money I got. I'm going to get some help. I don't know how this is going to work out, but at least I got somebody to hold my hand and listen to me.
Right. Yeah. And it just, like you said before, it really just makes people feel heard, understood, and cared about. And that's, you know, that's what they need is as far as that confidence to pull the trigger. And then not to mention the fact, you know, you take that component. So that's like, wow, I actually got to talk to the lawyer and, you know, he spent 25 minutes and actually was listening to me. Oh my goodness. So relative to everything else that's going on, that's good. And then you're not asking for $5,000 at that point, which they've certainly been more willing to come up with the money at that point. But now you're saying, hey, well, look, why don't we just start with your documents? Why don't we start with step one, $500 or whatever it may be, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, and when you do it that way, they get a lot more creative about how they can raise money. They start thinking, you know, oh, I could do this, I could do that. And they're more willing to do those things.
Right. But when they see a target that's so far out of base, you know, because the reality is the case is probably going to take, some cases just take that much money, you know, to get before it's all said and done. You know, I was just having a conversation with a lawyer earlier, but, you know, ultimately it's, you know, If they're looking at, you know, it's like trying to, you know, drive across the, you know, United States. If you're trying to look at all the time it's going to take, and then I got to go here, and then I got to my car, and I got to drive across the state, and then we got to stop, and we got to stay. If you just look at what the next thing is in front of you, you can deal with it kind of one bite at a time.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. And so, and besides, if they hear a big quote way beyond their means, they just kind of like hope goes out the window. And despair sets in, and that is not a good place to be. So you want to keep hope alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it really, you know, by offering that even as a starting point, it gives them an opportunity to get to know you. You get to deliver some service. Right. They're feeling comfortable. And then, you know, once they get to the point where they're realizing that it's going to be a little more complicated than maybe they thought, you know, of course, you're at that point, you have a great relationship with them. You know, who else are they going to hire but the person that helped them with their documents and got them started?
Absolutely. Yeah, you create loyalty.
Right. You exactly. Loyalty. And it's interesting. So, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, because we've talked about how, you know, but before I got involved with Unbundled Attorney, I actually acquired the American Bar Association Law Practice Management section has published a book on limited scope legal services. Stephanie Kimbrough is the author. Mm. And she talks about the disruption in the legal marketplace from things that are happening. And so your attorneys might want to take a look at that book.
It's called Limited Legal Services by the American Bar Association.
The title is Limited Scope Legal Services, Unbundling and the Self-Help Client. And the author is Stephanie L. Kimbrough, K-I-M-B-R-O.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely a pioneer in this industry as far as offering these options, for sure.
Yeah. And so her book is published by the American Bar Association. And she talks about the disruptors and how the, you know, law profession needs to respond. Of course, you can respond one attorney at a time. It doesn't need to be the whole profession. But you know, we're going to be servers of the public. We need to take the public where they are and begin to meet their needs in the current modern marketplace. And I think that's part of what Unbundle is doing. But there's something bigger here out. And that's what I'd like to get into, and that is the nature of family law practice itself and the court system, because attorneys are given a role in the current system. Our role is to be an advocate for our client. Now, that word advocate has meant a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It used to be in the canons of ethics in Texas that you were supposed to be a zealous advocate. Well, what is a zealot? And is that really helping families to be a zealot? And they took that word out. So now we're just to be advocates. But what does that mean? So the overarching principle and the overarching policy for family law courts is to serve the best interest of the children. And even when children aren't involved, I think the best interest of the family. So the question comes up, what about the adversarial system itself? Does the adversarial system that we have actually do harm? Does it do harm? And I form the conclusion that it does. That the adversarial litigation system, by its very nature, does harm to the litigants. It is, I think, inefficient and very costly with very uncertain results. I formed this opinion some time ago that the adversarial system itself does harm to families and children. So I set up a nonprofit. It's called Enlightened Family Justice Institute. And I pulled together an interdisciplinary board and sort of operate like a think tank to come up with strategies and options for how to introduce innovations in family courts. And innovations that would lead us to something that is more therapeutic and collaborative and not adversarial. So the idea is that, and the vision is that courts would continue to resolve legal issues, because that's what they're supposed to do through due process. But they would also facilitate or help the healing of human conflict. Well, that's a new paradigm, a new add-on. Now, there are quite a few people out there, it turns out, who thinks that the way the court systems work today are broken and are not helpful to families, but a lot of people don't know exactly what to do about it. So we think we have some answers. And very recently, I got the attention of the Texas Supreme Court's Office of Court Administration and some people at the some top professor at the LBJ School of Public Affairs. And so the three of us, or three organizations, are going to host a convening of stakeholders from around the state in late January of 2017. And the purpose of the conversation is going to be all around the lines of this. Should the courts follow the ethic first, do no harm?
Yeah, it's doing the creed no of the doctor and, too, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the prime bioethic. That's ancient for physicians. So, and the idea of first do no harm is legally, the legal phrase we have is for non-malfeasance. Malfeasance is doing harm to others. So should the courts apply the concept of non-malfeasance to themselves? Now, obviously, I think they should. I don't know. We're going to get together stakeholders, lawyers, judges, mental health professionals, all kinds of people who are professionals that have something to do in one way or another with how the family law court system works, and have a big facilitated dialogue and see what comes out of it. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and that's exciting.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about making shifts on a systematic level and taking a closer look at really what the system that we have here promotes, and that exactly. And in many ways it's conflict, and you've
obviously got an experience in conflict resolution and so forth, and maybe we could talk a bit about that. And certainly one of the things that you know, it's because it's such an adversarial system and so complicated as well, just to get things filed, get things processed, that, you know, limited scope is necessary because people can't do these things on their own because it's just too darn complicated and there's too much at stake and they're trying to fight. They have to go in there and fight for their own rights as opposed to trying to come up with a solution that works for all the parties and the family, like you said.
Right. And you know, we may create, I mean, out of this is the very possibility that we create some new roles for lawyers as problem solvers.
Yeah, and so that was one of the things that I really appreciate about you know, when you mentioned that you know you were doing limited scope representation before we even you know got introduced to sort of working together. You know, a lot of times you know we reach out, start talking to attorneys, and then start educating them on how to offer unbundled, and then they start offering them into the practice. But this is something that you've been doing, you know, even before we worked together, and you're one of very few, honestly, that you know, came out and just started offering these options, you know, before, you know, our influence and so forth. I mean, at least a small, among a small percentage of attorneys that is doing anyway amongst Stephanie Kimbo and of course, many other lawyers. What was it for you that originally led you to start offering these options and in the first place?
Well, I like that question. Look, I watch what's going on in society and what I see is that the middle class is being hollowed out, that the income disparity over the past 30 years plus has been growing more and more, and that the wealth disparity is growing to be greater and greater. So people have fewer resources to hire legal services. So the fact that if it's true that the middle class is being hollowed out, and I think it is, and that people who are on the lower end of the income scales are being squeezed even more, that hurts all of the professions because they don't have money to buy services. It's important that we have a robust middle class if we're going to have a prosperous economy because they have effective demand. So they don't. So there's a diminution in effective demand for legal services as well as other professional services. And that's part of the disruption that you know Kimbrough talks about. So if we that disruptor, the fact that they have more limited resources means that this model of you're expecting somebody with a custody case come in and plunk down $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 is unrealistic.
Yep.
You're just not going to have very many cases if that's your filter. And so, and that does a disservice also for the people who simply don't have the means. So to me, it was made sense to offer that kind of service. And I know there's been a lot of resistance because, you know, I've also worked with Lawyer Referral Service, which is another local service, and they have lawyer referral services around the country. And that's kind of how I first found out about it, because the local lawyer referral service was trying to promote limited scope, and they were getting great resistance from the people who were providing services, the lawyers on their panels. And so I started digging into it.
Yeah, you know, we've really tried to get to flesh out the actual numbers to show attorneys, you know, what's actually happened to the marketplace. In fact, so we put together a webinar recently that's on our website now, that's free to watch. And what we did is we did the research and came up with the numbers, and literally we've seen an increase in pro se litigants, people filing with a representation of an attorney from what I think it was like 1% back in the early 70s. And then it was 40% in the mid 90s. And now most statistics say it's as high as 70% or more in most jurisdictions as of the last, you know, 5-10 years.
And that's a huge sign of a disruption. And I've been tracking that too. And since I've been working with Office of Court Administration in Texas, they keep stats on that. And it's one of the reasons that very statistic is, I think, one of the reasons it's going to open the door to innovation in how family law courts work. The very fact that there's so much pro se.
Absolutely. And it's essential not only because of that, but also because at the same time, and this is one of the things we talked about as well, we did the numbers on population growth versus new attorney graduates.
And we find that there's actually three times as many lawyers per person now as there were during the same period of time back in, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And so now you have basically, you know, gone from, you know, 1% to 40% to 70%. So those, like, is a third of the amount of clients available if you're offering, you know, only these, you know, high retainers. And there's three times as many lawyers competing for that one third of clients. And then you got LegalZoom and you got all these other companies that are coming in here saying $199 for divorce and forms. And you're trying to compete against it at the same time. It's just the marketplace has completely shifted.
And those are disruptors. That's what Kimbrough's talking about. So if there's a disruptor, you got to figure out a new strategy.
Yep. And so that's the strategy you start implementing, is finding a way to meet people where they're at and finding a way to – because the reality is very few lawyers are aligning their firms to serve the 70% of the market. You know, because you know, there's a lot of people, attorneys, that assume that, you know, if you're working with lower income people, you got to make low income. There's just no way to go about it. But, you know, obviously, you know, by your example and some of the other examples of the attorneys on the podcast and in all throughout our network, you know, there are creative ways and solutions that you can offer these unbundled options where folks can still fit in their budget and you can still make good money at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And so that's the limited scope you're doing. It's also interesting to see how Travis County, especially in a very conservative state, has been supporting offering limited scope options. Have you seen that unfolding, given being someone from Travis County, to see how the Bar Association has been adopting it in your local area?
Yeah, I think they're still most of the members of the bar and the family law bar are still highly resistant to it. I mean, you know, I suspect you're learning from, you know, the people who contact attorneys, how much resistance there is. I mean, that's a big challenge. You're trying to educate attorneys to these disruptions and shifts in the marketplace, but they're being resistant. Now, if they get enough pain in the pocketbook because they're not getting cases or their caseload is down and people don't, I don't know. I guess someday, you know, they'll have to think, maybe I need to change.
Well, I think a lot of attorneys just believe that if they offer unbundled options or, you know, lower retainers and fees, they're not going to make as much money, or, you know, the people are going to screw them over. So maybe, can you speak to, you know, for attorneys that may be listening that you're considering offering these options or they're still beginning and exploring these things, can you speak to the economics of limited scope and unbundled options? We have been a little bit on this episode already with talking about how people can get started easier and pay a little less and transition and so forth. But can you talk to how, you know, how well this has impacted, how offering these options has impacted your practice financially?
Look, it's the reality, I think, at least from my experience, is you're probably going to have to do a little bit more work on the front end for which you don't get paid. Or you're going to have to, I'll put it this way, you're going to have to spend a little bit of time to get the client enrolled and on board, and some of that you may not get to charge for some of that time, but that's just kind of a cost for doing business. And these leads, you know, if you're getting a bunch of leads in there and you're getting a pretty good conversion rate, it's not a real high marketing cost. Every business has some marketing cost. I mean, and on our profession, advertising was not allowed for a long time. It was a heck of a long time before lawyers got commercial speech. It was a constitutional right that was really deprived them. But now that they got commercial speech, what do you see? I mean, how costly is it to advertise on TV, on radio, in print? And what kind of legal services can you offer by those mediums that would be cost effective? Well, I suggest that they're fairly limited. And so most of us who are out here practicing family law, we're not likely to do that. We're not going to do print media or TV media. But the internet now is another thing. And a lot of people are, you know, having pretty successful websites that are highly optimized. And but a good leads program like this brings in a lot of leads for you to consider. And so a young attorney can, without a great deal of marketing cost, get a lot of cases that they can look at, even though they may have to spend some time on the front end that's not going to be compensated. They can still build up a pretty decent book of business and get a loyal following. And for a young attorney, you want to get clients that like you. At the end of your service, they're pleased with what they got. They feel they got good service, they at a good price from somebody who could listen and understand. And you know what? They're going to refer friends and family. And that's the best form of business, is to get a referral from a satisfied client.
Yep.
But if you're getting started, you have to get people in the door. And a leads program like this is really helpful.
Well, especially for the those old experienced attorneys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's working for me too.
How long have you been practicing for, Richard?
You kind of ask about the younger attorneys, and I'm speaking to them. But
yep.
That, what I said is true, equal for more experienced attorneys, especially if they find that they had a drop off in their caseload because of the shifts in the marketplace that we just talked about.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've lived through these shifts from 70s, 80s. How long have you been practicing for now, Richard?
Well, of course, I had my earlier stage of my career. And so I've been doing family law 20 years, but I'm a 50-year-plus practitioner.
Wow. Yeah. So you've seen this entire shift in the trend, obviously the economy of the internet, the shift, the depletion of the middle class, the impact of inflation. I mean, it's just, it's a completely different market than it was 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
You know, and so adapting and being able to find a way to serve those folks that, are in that vast majority of the market is what we're finding to be a really important, critical determining factor. And we're getting attorneys that have been in practice for many years as well, coming on board and starting to learn how to offer the options. And it's challenging. You know, if you've done practicing one way for so long, it's tough sometimes to have to find a way to adapt and start offering these options.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is you've got to make the adaption in your own mind. You've got to shift your paradigm. And a lot of people just don't want to shift out of an old paradigm. Mm. But once you make that shift, you're going to make some adjustments. But, I mean, it's certainly doable. I really think the first place, though, is the paradigm shift in the mind of the practitioner.
Do you have any recommendation? Obviously, that reading that book would probably be a good thing to kind of better understand the market and understand where these trends are going. Is there any other suggestions you'd have for someone that is looking at this limited scope thing and maybe was originally opposed to it, but maybe feeling the pinch a little bit from the market, or maybe just wants to help more people and find more ways to do this? What's a good way to start having that shift, that paradigm shift, and start getting their feet wet and offering these options?
Well, people get in the profession for all sorts of reasons. And so they have different motivational drivers for why they got in and what they want to get out of being in the practice.
Yep.
If they're driven mostly by money, if that's their big driving motivator, I would suggest that maybe law is not the best field for them. Because you may make a nice living if you handle it right, but you're probably not going to get to be wealthy. At least only a very few lawyers get to be wealthy. And most of those lawyers are practicing in other areas of law, such as tort law, personal injury law, where there's big money at stake on contingent fees. And we don't do that in family law. We're selling time. And we only have so much time to sell. And we only have so many hours a week that we can bill out. So we're going to have a cap on how much we can make. Now, if you've got a cap on the hours, then the way you increase your income is to increase your hourly rate.
Effective hourly rate, yeah.
That's where our other driver comes in. Why am I doing this? I want to make, obviously, a decent living. I need to make a decent living for me and my family. But if I'm here as a service profession, then I need to balance out my concern for money with how I'm serving people. So people have got to get clear in their thinking about what their motivational drivers are. If it's all about money, well, maybe they're not in the right profession.
Yeah, absolutely. And, There are ways to improve upon the effective hourly rates. You know, we've talked about that on some other episodes as far as, you know, offering some flat rate on bundled services. And, you know, just because you charge, you know, $500 or $750, even if your hourly rate's $250 an hour, it doesn't mean it has to take you 2 hours to get the job done. You know, you can leverage the time of the paralegal and some document automation software, for example, and maybe get the job done for an hour, and you're, and maybe a little bit of you know, consultation time. Now all of a sudden, your effective hourly rate became $375 an hour. You know, so there's ways to get creative around offering these flat rates and options where, you know, that effective rate can start to become higher. But you know, at the same time, it's got to be about making money and making a difference in today's day and age, and that's what people are looking for.
Yeah, and if you're going to be in this profession, I think you need both. You're making money, but you're making a difference in a positive way in the life of other people.
Yep, and I think that's what people look for. You know, that's what people are looking for is attorneys that really care, and that's they can kind of get a smell or a sense for what your motivations are, right?
Yeah, they sure do. And if you and that's they do want somebody who cares. We want that out of our physicians too. And why not for my lawyers? So somebody who listens empathetically, cares, and, you know, they'll work with them. And I agree with you. You know, you can, there are strategies to kind of up your effective rate. But even so, you only got so many hours to sell, you know, day, week, month, year. Even if you up your effective rate, there's a cap on what you can make. You're not going to make millions. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to be super wealthy doing this. So anybody who's got that kind of thinking, I think, has got an illusion. Well, maybe there's something else they could do, but they're probably not, this is not a good fit for it.
Right. You know, and but of course, on the flip side, play the other advocate. I mean, it's a great profession. Obviously, you've, you know, made a great living for many years, and you get the good sense of helping a ton of folks. And by offering these options, man, there's so many people and so many families that otherwise wouldn't be in a position to even have the rights to their kids or get visitation or custody. And I mean, that changes those kids' lives. I mean, honestly, it's just
it does.
When other attorneys would have turned them away.
And there's some prestige to being an attorney. There still remains, I think, some prestige of being in a learned profession. So there's a little bit of status to go with it.
Yep.
For being a lawyer.
Yep. Absolutely. And a lot of appreciation from the folks that you're helping. I'm sure we're certainly getting a lot of positive feedback from the clients that you've been able to serve. And I'm sure they're expressing a lot of appreciation for the types of options that you've been offering them to you as well. So, you know, we couldn't be happier for the work that you're doing and the amount of people you're able to help as a result of these options you've learned how to cultivate and deliver. And I really appreciate you certainly taking the time today to give a window into how it is that you've been able to do that.
Well, I'm happy to do it, Dave. And as I learn more about this sometime in the future, we can visit again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could do it in person sometime next time in Texas. But for now, I thank you again for taking the time. And I really appreciate your insight and perspective and recommendations. And, you know, I certainly we're doing everything we can to start to turn the tides because, you know, honestly, if all attorneys started offering these options and were educated on how to do that, we wouldn't have 70% of Americans filing and representing themselves, pro se. You know, we would have a completely different legal marketplace and legal system. And then certainly combined with some of the work you're doing on the systematic challenges as well, you know, we could, you know, there's a real possibility of changing the way this is done. It doesn't have to be the status quo. So I appreciate the fact that you're doing your part to do whatever you can to make that reality, that change become a reality.
Well, thank you for that.
All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. Richard, thanks again. And for everyone else that's been listening to the podcast, as always, we really appreciate your participation. Please share the podcast with anyone you know that could benefit from these strategies and these tools. Certainly jump on iTunes on your computer and leave us a rating review or any feedback you have. We read every single review, and we really appreciate the support of the show. And we thank you again for listening, and we'll see you all on the next episode. Thanks so much.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.